Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Last night was not one of those nights. The 2-10 Giants against the 5-7 Eagles after a monsoon. Man, that didn't offer anybody anything. That was nothing to get hyped about. Unless you're an Eagle fan. Unless you're an Eagle fan, there was no reason to watch that game or think about that game. Nor if you're a Giants fan. Hell, if you're a Giants fan, the only reason to watch that game was to see if your guys could extend their losing streak to 9 games and preserve their chance of getting Ohio State stud Chase Young. That's the only reason to watch that game. But then suddenly, you know who came off the bench and started doing things like this.
Shotgun snap, sets his feet, line drive, throw on a slant, belt high catch. It was made there by the wide receiver coming on the near side. Slayton from the 20 to the 10, down the sideline into the end zone, a touchdown. Slayton got it, spinning off a tackler, racing down the near sideline, a 35-yard strike.
That's Westwood One. Damn. Like, who's the new guy? The new guy looks all right. Wait a minute. The new guy is the same as the old guy. It's freaking Eli Manning. And you know what? I'm going to be real. It felt pretty good to see old man Eli out there because he looked better than he has in a long time. My man was actually out there slinging it.
Eli back to throw, has time. He's going to take a deep shot down the left sideline, and it's caught! And then knocked out of bounds is Slayton inside the 30-yard line, out at the Philadelphia 30.
Giants radio on the call. I mean, damn, look at that old man. Look at that old man dropping dimes. No pun intended. Don't sue me, Danny. No pun intended. But damn, Eli Manning to Darius Slayton was unstoppable. There isn't a scheme to stop that. Nobody has anything to combat that, especially the sad sack Eagles. So that led to a field goal. Then there was this one to close out the first half.
Gets the snap, drops back, got a block from Barkley, winds up, arching spiral near side. Slayton over the shoulder, catch to the 20, down the near side, the 10, chase to the 5, pylon, touchdown! The Giants have scored again. Eli Manning with a long touchdown pass. 55 yards. Booze cascading down here in Philadelphia toward the hometown Eagles. This is stunning.
That was stunning. That was vintage Eli Manning. Did you see how geeked he was? Did you see how fired up his teammates were? That was the start of something amazing. A great story. Story being the double champ comes off the canvas, lights it up, gives the Giants one final memory of him going into Philly and punking the rival Eagles on a Monday night when Eli had long ago been left for dead. Left for Pate, Arch, and Coop to come clean out his locker and bring him home. But not before Eli stabs Philly in the heart one last time. And he goes out in one last blaze of glory. Going into halftime, 17-3. That's exactly how it looked. Man, it was awesome. It was glorious. But then the Giants remembered they were the Giants. They promptly backed out of the locker room and then choked that game away. I would love to know exactly what Pat Shurmur told his team at halftime. It must have been something along the lines of, hey, look, I don't know who the hell you think you are or what the hell you all think you're doing, but you can go ahead and stop that right now. This is not who we are. This is not what we do. I don't even recognize you people anymore. Now trust the bleeping process and let's get back to playing Giants football. And that's exactly what they did. Don't tell me that Shurmur can't make adjustments because he took a team that was playing pretty well in the first half and adjusted them into the sorry crew of ballers that they've been all year long. You know Shurmur went to the offense and said, you're gouging them. You've already lit them up for 225 yards. Enough of that. You go for even 50 more yards in the second half, I will have a boot in your ass. And as for you, Darius Slayton, who the hell do you think you are? Amani Toomer, Plex, Victor Cruz, all of them rolled into one? What do you say you dial it back, hero? Stop making plays. Stop making it about yourself. Make sure you drop a critical third down pass late in the fourth quarter. Oh, and defense. Y'all look like you knew what you were doing in the first half. In other words, this is not who we are. This is not how we practice. This is not how we play. You're giving America the wrong freaking impression. Stop doing everything right and go back to getting it all wrong. Go back to being confused. Go back to being out of position. Go back to being unprepared. Refuse to stop Boston Scott whenever he has the ball. Forget your assignments and definitely make sure you leave Philadelphia's most dangerous weapon wide open when it matters most. All right, y'all got that? Everybody? All right, everyone, bring it in. Choke on three. One, two, three, choke. That's exactly what they did, too. They came out in the second half, and they let Philadelphia right back into it. The Giants saw an Eagles team that was on a three-game losing streak, who had just played a horrible half, was losing guys to injury left and right, and thought, damn, this is getting away from us. We're taking our eyes off the prize. We've got a few dudes going rogue on us and trying and executing. We need to pull together right now. We need to man the hell down and find a way to lose to this team. And then they did just that. Philadelphia scored late in the third, made it 17-10. Then with less than 2 minutes to go, Carson Wentz found Zach Ertz.
Gets the snap, fakes the handoff. Here comes the blitz, a quick throw in the end zone. Caught, touchdown, underneath, down the middle, lunging to Andy Crabb, Zach Ertz. 2-yard touchdown pass, and the Eagles to within a point of tying, and they bring out the extra point team and try to tie the game with 1:53 to go.
Still, Westwood won. All right, so I'm clear about one thing. I mean, respect, I guess, for the Eagles, for how they battled. They did go into the game with three healthy receivers and then lost two of them. They were so banged up and so beaten down that Ertz was playing wide receiver and 40-year-old quarterback Josh McCown was getting ready to play receiver. Wentz said that they had to wear, or they were down so many guys on offense, he was, quote, seeing routes I've never even read before in those situations.
Some of these routes I've never even read before in those situations.
Right, Carson, because you had guys out there that you probably didn't even know. He's probably like, hey, you, whoever you are, just get open. Hey, you, home slice, watch your face. Run to that light post over there. The ball will be there when you turn around to look for it. Fact is, it really didn't matter who lined up for the Eagles. The Giants were going to find a way to give them that game. That's who the Giants are. That's what they do. And that's not me talking. That's their supposed once-in-a-lifetime generational back Saquon Barkley talking.
We're a team that finds a way to lose a lot of games. That's our team. We're just inconsistent for both. We find a way to lose games. We got to find a way to turn that to the other side and find a way to win games. When is that going to happen? I have no idea.
He just said it. We're a team that finds a lot of ways to lose games. Quote, we got to find a way to win games. When is that going to happen? I have no idea. End quote. Me neither, big dude. Me neither, but I know this. The Giants had to really want to lose that game in order to actually lose that game. And they did. And there was no greater demonstration of finding a way to lose than forgetting to cover Zach Ertz in OT.
Shotgun snap. Looks, catches his arm, throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Ertz underneath the crossbar! Eagles have won the game in overtime!
Ball game. Thanks for coming, and thank you for wasting 3 hours of my life that I'll never get back. How does that happen? I mean, seriously, answer the question. How does that happen? Zach Ertz is a really big dude. He's listed at 6'5", 250. He's really good at the sport of football. He's a two-time Pro Bowler. He's the guy who scored the game-tying touchdown. He pretty much was the only viable target for Carson Wentz. And yet somehow in overtime, on the most important play of the game, there is not a Giants player within 10 yards of this guy. If there was any player that you definitely wanted to cover on that play, it was Zach Ertz. And yet this guy somehow is completely wide-ass open. That's how you know you're committed to losing. That's how you lose 9 straight games to tie a franchise record. And that is why head coach Pat Shurmur was asked if he thought that he would still be coaching and would have a chance to go for the record. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I do. But we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Wow. Not exactly Rod Marinelli's shovel and pick speech, is it? In other words, Shurmur's shovel is dull. And his will is the opposite of outstanding. Hey, listen, if it sounds like I'm angry about this, if you're thinking, damn, Rome, what are you so worked up about? It's because I am angry about this. It's because it's personal. It is. And no, it's got nothing to do with some whack Hollywood slash redemption story for Eli Manning. I don't care about that. You can all waste your own time arguing about whether or not a quarterback who is under 500 lifetime is a Hall of Famer or not. And no, it's not because I, quote, lost a bet on the game. Why would I bet a game like that? That's not it. No, I have more important fish to fry here. I am pissed, I'll admit that, but here's why. The Giants destroyed the dream. My dream. One that should be your dream too. The dream of a 6-10 team winning a division. They took that from me. I don't ask for much in life. I try and do the right things. I try to give you a good show every single day. And if anything positive comes my way because of that, great. But I do not get attached to the outcomes. But I'll be honest, a 6-10 divisional champ was something I wanted. And I wanted that badly. Who needs a mediocre team with a mediocre record in the playoffs? Nobody, I should say. What we want is a bad team with a truly hideous record, winning the division and raising a division banner and hosting a playoff game. We all want that. And is that really too much to ask? Apparently so. Apparently holding on to a 14-point lead with 30 minutes to go was just too much to ask of the New York Giants. Apparently covering one really big dude who's the only possible target was too much to ask. Apparently tackling Boston Scott, a former practice squad player, was too much to ask. And I guess picking up first downs on offense was just too big of a hassle. If you clowns want to go out there and lose every single game, that's fine. Be my guest. But when you have a chance to make history by paving the way for a 6-10 division champ, you better not blow a 2-touchdown lead in the second half. Because when you do that, you don't just let yourselves down, you let me down. And frankly, when you're as bad as you are, it's no longer about you, it's about me. Now, because of that hideous choke job in the second half and overtime, the Eagles get their sixth win. The best we can get is a 7-9 division champ. And I don't even want to think about the possibility of somebody winning that division at 8-8. When you have the dream of a 6-10 division champ for as long as I've had it, and then it gets ripped from you, 7-9 does not feel that good. 8-8 makes me sick. I hope you're happy, G-Men, because you just ruined everything. Not just for yourselves, but more importantly for the rest of us. But that's what happens when you're selfish. That's what happens when you don't do your job. And if it sounds like I'm pissed, it's because I am pissed. Thanks. Thanks for nothing.
1-800. Nothing.
We get nothing.
You lose.
Hey now, are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, don't make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. So why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices, which are smoked over wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously. It's one that you can taste in every single bite. I mean, after all, who wants dried, rough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness. Teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take it up a notch. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Therese Paylor. Therese, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me on, man.
Always good to have you. All right, so a number of things I want to get with you about, but why don't we start in New Orleans, because you were in the Dome for that game this past weekend. It was your first time being in the Superdome for a serious game with a crowd that was going that crazy. For those who have never been in that Dome, what's the experience like, and how tough is it to concentrate and focus?
Jim, I've been to basically every NFL stadium. I think I've counted like there's one I haven't been to, like Tampa. I'll tell you this right now, when that place is packed for a big game, it's hard to find a louder place. We're, you know, the media's sitting all the way at the top, and like the media table was shaking. That's how loud it was. It's a great atmosphere, and to me, as loud as it was with the way the Saints were playing, for Jimmy Garoppolo to do what he did, lead that team back, Kyle Shanahan, clutch play calling. A team can perform like that in a situation like that, tells me they've got a Super Bowl ceiling.
You know, I was going to say, you've had some time to think about this now. When you think about how hostile that environment was, how sharp Drew Brees was that day, and you've had some time to think on that, reflect on that, how big of a win was that for the 49ers?
I think it's huge because, let's face it, in some of the 49ers' other big games this year, Garoppolo hasn't played great. He's been okay, but you had a few questions about, okay, when it gets down to it, how is he going to perform in the playoffs? That is the ultimate playoff atmosphere. And Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan, like, you can tell both of them were really, really trying to win the game. They were throwing out wrinkles. Jim, those are two great defenses now. I watch a lot of tape, hours and hours of tape. And those are two really, really good defenses. For both those teams to put up nearly 50 points tells you both those play callers added in wrinkles to what they had been doing because they knew how important that game was. So for the Niners to go into that place and win that game tells me everything I need to know about what they can accomplish this year. And it's a lot. This team can absolutely get to the Super Bowl.
We are talking to senior NFL writer for Yahoo and a Hall of Fame voter, Therese Paylor. I think you're right. I think that game, my thought was they're good. They might even be Super Bowl good. And Jimmy Garoppolo really did step up, to your point. When this guy needed somebody to make a play, of course, he went looking for his tight end, George Kittle. What was going through your head, Therese, when you saw him make that play at the end of the game? And then what were the types of things his teammates were saying about him and that play?
Absolute beast, first of all, with complete beast mode. And you're watching him make the play and the catch. And that's a concept they typically go to. It was a choice route to Kittle. They had a couple receivers in front of him. Kittle was lined up off the line of scrimmage. The two receivers went downfield, drawing the coverage away, and then Kittle could go inside or out based on the coverage he got. He saw Chauncey Gardner-Johnson sitting inside, so he went out. Great route. And then it's like, okay, here's a big gain here. So the Saints have a pretty – they have a pretty salty secondary. You know, they'll come hit you. Those guys play with a little attitude. The first guy should have brought him down around the 45. He gets touched at the 50. You know, he drags him 5 yards. Okay. But that's not happening. I'm like, oh, my God, what's happening here? So down to the 40-yard line. Here come a couple more guys. And Kittle just continues to go beast mode on this play 17 yards after he was first touched. It's the kind of play that shows how special he is as a player. It's the kind of play that even though he's 26, he's a team captain. It shows why. And also, after the game, you know what his teammates told me? They were using phrases like GOAT. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. Multiple teammates told me that independent of each other. He's a very special player, and he's somebody that they obviously need to win in a big game because they went right to him when it really mattered. And I think the combination of him and Emmanuel Sanders is good enough to win on the big stage as targets.
Therese Paylor joining us. All right, so let's go to the AFC really quickly. The Chiefs beat the Patriots in New England on Sunday, and now there's some other news surrounding the Patriots, which I'll get to in a minute. But as somebody who knows that Kansas City team really well, what do you make of the way they showed up in Foxborough?
I think if you're a Chiefs fan, what you're doing is you're watching that game, and you feel happy and encouraged because for the first time in years in a big game, your defense didn't just take it. You weren't just playing soft, bend but don't break defense. For the first time, you saw the Chiefs really take it to those guys offensively with stunts, games, blitz schemes, well executed too. Look, I've watched the Chiefs for a long time. I was a beat writer for them for a long time before I became a national guy. And it's been a long time since I've seen the Chiefs execute stunts like that, execute blitzes that way. It was timed so well. And those are the kind of things that you've got to have in place in doing well in the playoffs because in today's NFL, offenses are so supercharged, you got to be able to go get it on defense and make stuff happen. And to me, the scheme they had translates defensively to January and the players they have too, Jim. Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, these guys are dogs and they compete. And they've kind of brought a swagger and edge to this defense. So the Chiefs are winning games now without their offense being like the 99 Rams, which you couldn't say last year. That's a great step for this team, and it's one that you hope would continue into January. I will say this real quick. It was obvious the Chiefs were going to win that game. They threw in some wrinkles that they hadn't shown in previous weeks. It's going to be very important for them in a month or so when January comes. for them to add in wrinkles to the wrinkles, because now that stuff is on tape. And if they do face the Patriots again, they will have counters for them.
Therese Paylor joining us, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. All right, so what about the Patriots? They're going to face Cincinnati. And in Zach Taylor's press conference yesterday, he was asked about a report that the Patriots had somebody in the press box who was filming the Bengals sideline. Let me ask you this. Is this just standard operating procedure that a lot of teams do pieces on advanced scouts where they accidentally film the sideline of an opponent? Or are people freaking out because it's the Patriots? Is it unusual or not?
Look, it's newsworthy. It's newsworthy. And I will say this. It is the Patriots, so that's going to add a heightened sense to it, okay? But I've talked to some evaluators, people in the league over the last 24 hours. The general sense I got is, okay, let's find out what's on the tape, first of all. And second of all, listen, they're doing stuff that I think teams do, right? But it's like tampering in the NFL. Like, everybody kind of does it, but if you get caught, you got to get punished. Those are the rules. So depending on what they found on those tapes, and I saw there's some reports kind of out there showing that the tape does show hand signals, teams are expecting punishment. They want to see some punishment, Jim. They do. Because guess what? They got caught. So it doesn't really matter if other teams do the same things. They do. They've long been doing it. It's part of the culture. But they still want to see the punishment come. And if you're the Patriots, who kind of had a history for this, you got to know that you can't have this. And it's a bad look. So you've got to be more careful than other teams. So the past history, the optics of it, they don't look good. And for that, you're going to get punished.
So what kind of a punishment do you think would fit that crime if they did the crime?
You know, I think that's a good question. But I really try to be reasonable on things like this. So, like, you know, are we talking about forfeiting game? No. Are we talking about firing belt? Like, no. Like, nothing like that. I think a massive fine will do. A loss of draft picks, that'll hurt them. You know, a pick or picks, a premium pick, you know, that'll hurt them. You want to suspend somebody for a little while, you can do that too. I think that's all reasonable based on the history and the past. Things they've had to deal with the Patriots on this subject. But I this, talking to people throughout the league, they do want to see some sort of punishment in the realm of the things that I've talked about.
We're talking to Therese Paylor. I don't know exactly what they were thinking. I don't know what they were doing. I think they got to know better. The Bengals seem to think, though, that they were looking for an edge because the Bengals quickly sent that tape to the NFL. Listen, before I let you go, the Titans, I want to switch up for a moment. They went on the road. They put 42 on the Raiders to win their fourth straight. That is 6 of 7. How impressed are you with the way they played in the second half of the season?
Yeah, the Titans have been like the Chiefs' personal boogeyman, second to the Patriots over the last few years, so I've watched a lot of them, okay? I'm actually really impressed with them. I think they play tough defense, but more importantly on offense, they've got Derrick Henry in a contract year, basically looking like a faster Jim Brown. You know, the guy's nearly 6'4", 240, and his stiff arm is ridiculous. So they built their entire offense around his ability in the zone scheme, gap scheme, to get outside, do that, and hurt teams. And the best thing they did was go to Ryan Tannehill, because guess what? He's a big athletic quarterback. He reminds me of Josh Allen, who's not making mistakes. He's playing complementary football offensively. So I've been very impressed, not just with their commitment to the run game, but the pass actions they do off of it that Ryan Tannehill has executed without the back-breaking mistakes that got him run out of Miami. I've been very impressed with him, and I think he deserves a chance to loot that franchise going forward.
So how did he get right? How different is he now than he was when he was in Miami?
Yeah, Jim, it's just not making these killing mistakes, man. A lot of times you'll see with quarterbacks, they can really be buoyed if they're in the right system, especially if they have a good offensive line and a run game, and most importantly, an identity. Okay, the Tennessee Titans know who they are. For 20 years, they've been playing football the same way. Guess what? We're going to line up. We're going to beat you up with our giant running back. We're going to go play action off that. And guess what? If you take away our passing concepts, we got a mobile quarterback, right? From Vince Young to Mariota to Steve McNair, obviously. This is how they play. This is how those fans down there want to see it. And he fits right into the cog of, like, what they want to do offensively, the way they've long played. So a lot of times in the NFL, it's really important to remember this, guys. It's not necessarily just about the player's talent, because everybody's talented. It's about the fit and the coaching. And right now, Tannehill's getting exactly what he needs in both areas.
Say, need a last-minute gift? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. There are several options for gifts under $20, like a digital tire gauge, a 20-in-1 multi-tool, storage containers, even a universal backup camera. Or you can get professional quality power torque tool sets starting at only $19.99. And who doesn't love gift cards? You can even buy gift cards. You can even buy gifts online and pick them up in the store. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Yeah, I heard about this. You know, evidently this is our production people on the TV show that were there. And I have absolutely nothing to do. We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot or anything. I've never even seen any of their tapes or anything else. So this is something that we 100% have zero involvement with. This is something that you'd have to talk to the production people about, or what they were doing or whatever it was.
So was this your advance?
We've never seen anything that they've shot. Other than what's going to be on TV.
Nothing to see here. Just your regular run-of-the-mill feature on an advanced scout that they happen to film in the press box of a game, which includes their next opponent. And so what that the next opponent is coached by a first-year head coach that you've never faced? It's just a weird coincidence. Who cares that the Bengals don't think that it was an innocent mistake? Who cares that the Bengals are not accepting that it was an honest mistake and a big misunderstanding? Who cares that they seem to think that the Patriots knew exactly what they were doing, which is why the Bengals ripped the video and immediately sent it to the NFL for its review? Man, who cares? Nothing to see here. Yet some of you want to say the Patriots are just a bunch of cheating dogs and that it will never change. Yet nothing to see here. Although Tom Pelissero reported the following, quote, "What really drew the interest of the Bengals is the fact that they were shooting into the bench area. I've spoken with several people familiar with what was on that tape, including one person who has seen the tape and said it included video of the Bengals coaches making signals and then panning out onto the field," end quote. Once again, so what if that employee allegedly kept the camera locked on the Bengals sideline, shooting the coaches and the staff for the entire first quarter? Is there something so wrong about getting a little bit of B-roll? Since when is it a crime to do a great production and have 45 minutes to an hour of B-roll of some random opponent's sideline? And anyway, I'm sure if they did pick up signals or communications from the sideline, the Patriots would just delete that part of the tape anyway. So, to recap, the Bengals saw something that they thought was weird. A source told Adam Schefter it was fine, and Belichick told a local radio station it was fine. So all of you people who are freaking out and getting worked up about nothing, understand this. The Patriots have owned it. They admitted they violated the rule, but they had no intention to do so. They released the following statement, quote, "In addition to filming the scout, the production crew, without specific knowledge of league rules, inappropriately filmed the field from the press box. The sole purpose of the filming was to provide an illustration of an advanced scout at work on the road. There was no intention of using the footage for any other purpose. We understand and acknowledge that our video crew, which included independent contractors who shot the video, unknowingly violated a league policy by filming the field and sideline from the press box." End of quote. You know, the old, "I have never knowingly taken anything illegal" defense after being busted for being roided out of your mind. You buy that, right? Of course. I mean, how do you not give these guys the benefit of the doubt? Sure, they've done it before. Sure, they just did it again. Sure, Hoodie is the biggest control freak ever and knows every little thing about every little detail of that organization. Of course he does. But he didn't happen to know anything about that crew. And that crew apparently doesn't happen to know anything about NFL rules. But why is that so hard to believe for all of you? So shame on you for thinking the Patriots were doing anything other than producing a high-quality documentary series for their website, which included filming the other sideline for an hour. It's not the Patriots I know. They would never do something like that. They would never knowingly deflate footballs. They would never knowingly illegally tape the other team. Not once, much less twice. Man, don't hate. Stop hating. Don't hate what you can't replicate. Patriots I know would never do something like that. Ever. Not knowingly. I don't know. If you're going to cheat and you're them, wouldn't you be a little smarter about it than that? Where'd he come out? Is this a perfectly innocent mistake? Is it a perfectly reasonable explanation? Or do they just get caught doing what they always do? Cheating.
We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot.
Like I said, all of a sudden, you hear that guy clearly. There was no mumble in that.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Listen to the guy. All of a sudden, now he's Winston Churchill.
This. You know, evidently, this is
now he's the greatest orator ever.
On the TV show that we're there. And I have absolutely nothing to do with that.
He's saying, it has nothing to do with us. I know nothing about that. Come on, man. You know everything about every facet of that organization. Let me address a common problem. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and top performers can all seem to agree upon is the perfect diet does not exist. It just doesn't. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be so hard to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. That's why there is Athletic Greens. Let me tell you about this product. Athletic Greens, the ultimate daily all-in-one health drink, has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, or complex routines. It's simply the most complete supplement for a better you, and it's different from everything else. It's different because it's delivered in powder form, and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the product for you. Whether you're taking steps towards a healthier lifestyle or you're an athlete pushing for better performance, Athletic Greens takes all the guesswork out of your everyday good health. Why not try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. That's athleticgreens.com/Rome. Evan Fournier is my guest. Evan, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So you dropped one against Milwaukee last night, but you guys have won 4 of your last 5, even without Vooch, and now you've got the Lakers coming to town, as I mentioned. So what do you make of how your team has battled, despite the fact that you don't have everybody healthy?
Well, you know, we are fighting through a lot of injuries. It's not just Vooch. We have Aminu, who's out. Michael Carter-Williams has been out, and Aaron Gordon. So, you know, he's been hard. But, you know, we have a tough roster. We have guys that really wants to work hard every day, and you know, we are on a pretty good streak. Obviously, you know, the Bucks are a really good team, so you know, it was tough last night, but we are getting better and better.
Evan Fournier, my guest, and then you've got the Lakers coming in tomorrow night, which means you're going to face the best team in the West and your old coach in Frank Vogel. As you said last night, you've played against former coaches in the past. Quote, we're going to play against Frank. I'm sure he's going to want to kick our ass real bad for sure. So we got to be ready for that. End quote. So let me turn that thing on its head. How much are you looking forward to facing your former coach and the Lakers?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's always fun to play against guys that you know, you work with. Obviously, the fact that it's the Lakers, it's even more. You know, the Lakers, they have one of the biggest fan base in the entire league. There's going to be a lot of purple and yellow jersey at the Amway Center tomorrow. So, we got to be ready for a tough matchup. Obviously, they're on the roll. We're going to have to try to contain LeBron and AD. And make life hard on them.
All right, so despite the injuries, you guys are in second in the division, and if the season ended right now, you'd be in the postseason. Now, there was a time when that would have been a reason to party, but the way you guys played in the second half of last season, you raised the standard and the expectations. How important was that run last year to show everybody how good this team can be?
That was huge. I mean, we finished the year with the third best record after the, you know, we really got together and injury-free and, you know, you know, we've made moves that really helped us, you know, with Michael Carter-Williams and Kim Birch. But, You know, I mean, we are a good team. It's just it's a matter of make sure we are together all the time, and like consistency is key for us. You know, we don't have a guy like KD or, you know, superstars that can just carry us offensively. So, you know, we have to be tied together defensively for 48 minutes at all times. And that's definitely a challenge with 82 games. But like I said, we have a tough roster with guys that wants to win badly, and that's the key point for us.
We're talking Orlando Magic basketball. Guard Evan Fournier is my guest. You know, if we look back at last season for a moment, you had a career high in assists, and you played some elite defense, and you were a huge part of that run from mid-March to the end of the season that got you into the postseason. Steve Clifford said that he thought that you'd be a good defensive player, but you're even better than expected because of your toughness and your versatility. So having said that, how do you approach defense, and how much pride do you take in being able to impact the game on that end of the floor?
Well, obviously, I mean, if you want to win games, you have to play defense. You know, as a shooting guard, you play against pretty much elite guys, you know, every night. I mean, Bradley Beal, James Harden, Klay Thompson, all these guys, you know, you have a tough matchup every night. So, you know, you got to win your A game. You got to be competitive at all times. But, you know, I give credit to Coach Cliff. He makes defense easy for us. You know, it's really black and white. You know what you have to do. He makes the job easier for us. There's no gray areas. And you just have to execute, basically.
Isn't that what you want anyway from your head coach, man? Just be straight. Just let us know exactly what you need from us and where we stand. Yeah. In fact, Evan, I always enjoy talking to Steve Clifford. What's he like to play for?
Sorry? What does he like to play for?
Yes.
Well, he's a very disciplined coach. I mean, we all enjoy playing for him. He obviously changed the way we play. And, you know, we all give him credit for that. I mean, we pretty much had the same roster than 2 years ago. He brought a different approach to the team, and you know we play hard for him. You know, we fight for him, and you know we all enjoy playing for him for sure.
Evan Fournier, my guest for a few more moments. We're talking Orlando Magic basketball. You know, when I spoke to Clifford a couple of months back, he talked about the fact that a number of guys on the roster played international ball this summer. You were one of them. You helped lead France to a medal at the World Cup. What did you take away from that experience? What was that time like?
I mean, playing for a country is always different. You know, you can't compare the NBA and FIBA. It's two total different worlds. You know, there's a sense of pride and it's just a different feelings and different intensity. But, you know, it really gave me my groove back. You know, I was able to play great basketball with the national team this summer. And, you know, it's always good to play 5-on-5 in important games during the summer. So it really translated to the NBA to start off the season.
Now, you were named to the all-tournament team at the World Cup, and now you're getting some run as a potential all-star in the NBA. What would it mean to you to be an NBA all-star?
I mean, that would mean a lot, obviously. I mean, I think every player in this league wants to be an all-star you know, at some point in time. But really, the all-star is really... Unless you're a superstar, it's a team award. So, you know, we have to make sure we win games. Obviously, we're going to be better once Vooch comes back. But, you know, I just try to focus on winning games because, that's what, you know, at the end of the day, that's what matters, man.
All right, listen, before you go, I wanted to ask you about this because when you were growing up, there was a legend that as you were growing up in France, you were a huge Sacramento Kings fan and you loved those teams with Vlade, Peja, and you became a huge Mike Bibby fan. What was it about those Kings teams that you liked so much back in the day?
Well, you have to put things back in perspective. It was the early 2000s. There weren't that many Europeans back then. And you know, it was really my first time watching NBA playoffs. It was in 2002 against the Lakers, that series against the Lakers. And I don't know, just seeing guys from Europe, you know, I was like, well, you know, they have a great team. They have three guys from Europe, so... You know, maybe I can be in that position one day too, you know. And, you know, as I started to watch those games in during that series, I was like, whoa, this slow guy, number 10, is really, really good. And ever since, I've been a huge fan. I mean, he was my favorite player growing up.
I was going to say, he actually was really good. The story goes that you would tape the Kings games while you were at school, then you'd come home and watch them back. So what did you learn from watching Bibby, and how much did he inspire you?
He inspired me big time. But what inspired me the most is how clutch he was. I mean, He probably wasn't the best player on that team because he was probably like C-Web. But, you know, down the line, they gave him that ball and they trusted him to make big plays. You know, I'm thinking about that shot at Arco Arena when Fisher falls on the ground. You know, that's probably his biggest shot. It's just his attitude and his leadership that really inspired me.
Yeah, and those days were great. I used to go up to Sacramento at that time. I had a couple of appearances. Those fans were amazing. That barn would rock, man. That was an amazing time. You mentioned the playoffs. What do you remember about the 0-2 Western Conference Finals against the Lakers?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. No, it was a great series. You know, I wish the Kings would have won, but you know, it went the other way. I mean, it was just one of the best series ever, in my opinion. There were so many clutch plays, two great teams going at it. It was this rivalry against the Kings and the Lakers. I mean, it was just a great time to be an NBA fan.
It was. It was an amazing time. All right, so one last thought before I let you go. We're talking stories. There's also a story that back in the day, you wanted to be an archaeologist. How did that first come to be?
I don't know. I was just a big fan of dinosaurs. And I don't know. Just maybe watching Jurassic Park made me want to become an archaeologist. And I don't know. It was just something I was really like enjoying at the time. You know, I was young and I, yeah.
Come on, man. Don't give up. Don't give up on that. That's always going to be there. I was going to say, don't give up on that. That's always going to be there. There's plenty of time for that. You can still get there.
Yeah, that's probably too late for me. It's definitely too late for me. I'm going to have that.
Chuck, it's good to have you back in the jungle. How are you?
It's good to be back. I'm doing very well.
Good. Now, Chuck, you and I first spoke in the summer of 2014 after you had taken over as head coach. You were taking a pay cut to go from offensive coordinator at Notre Dame to coach a team that was 0-12. Now you are the MAC champions. I want to go into some detail on that journey, but overall, how does it feel to have taken a program from rock bottom to a championship?
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing, really, what we've been able to accomplish and what these kids have been through. And finding kids that – it's not hard to find kids that come here now, but it was hard to find kids that would jump on the Titanic 6 years ago and 5 years ago and say, we believe in what you guys are going to do, and we're going to come in here and we're going to trudge through all the crap and figure out a way to take something that's not very good right now and make it as good as anybody. So very proud of the kids that joined us a long time ago, our senior classes. You know, their first year, they were 3-9. It wasn't much fun. And to see the looks on their face Saturday and on the field after the game was pretty special.
Chuck Martin joining us. You know, when we talked also in 2016, you had started 0-6, and then you won the last six games. You won the division. You went to a bowl game. As you look back, how significant was that season in terms of getting to where you are right now?
Huge. It was kind of the turning point of all of it because when we were 0-6, we'd been 4-26 in our last 30 conference games at that point in time. We were two games into the conference schedule that year, and we were 4-26 the last four-plus years in league play. Since that time, we've gone 23-8. So obviously, getting our starting quarterback that year back and running the table, and that was the first time they've had success in about 4 or 5 years. And since then, we've just kind of taken off, and we've been as good as any team in the league the last 3 years. But this year, we kind of found a way to put it together with a bunch of young kids and win a bunch of close games and finally get the title that we've been looking for.
We're talking to Chuck Martin. You know, Chuck, this season, three of your first four games were at Iowa, at Cincinnati, at Ohio State. I mean, obviously, there are easier ways to get into a season, and that's the kind of thing that could crush some teams. What did you and your players take away from that?
Yeah, we were pretty crushed. We lost Ohio State 76-5, and they scored the last 76, and we were starting conference play, kind of licking our wounds, and you know how it is in sports. It doesn't matter who you play when you lose, and you lose big. Your confidence and everybody around doesn't believe, and everybody's got fingers to point at people. So we had a long week before we played Buffalo in our first conference game, just trying to get our kids back to believe that they could be a good team in our league. And obviously since then, Ohio State's done that to a lot of people, but it still didn't feel good to happen to you. So incredibly proud of how our kids were resilient and had belief and had confidence and bounced back from a very tough non-league slate, because didn't put us in a great frame of mind to go into league play, but we won a tough game against Buffalo. And then the major thing with this team is we won five conference games all by one score or less, right down to the MAC championship game Saturday. So they've been crazy resilient and just found ways to win games down the stretch of games. And we don't score a ton of points, but We do enough on OD and special teams to find ways to win games.
Honestly, Chuck, I think it's amazing the way you guys responded to that loss. I mean, 76-5, but even Maurice Thomas was saying afterwards, crazy enough, we knew that we would be good after that loss. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, you got beat that bad, all that stuff. But we were like, quote, we're good. We in the locker room were like, we're going to take what we can from that loss and get better. And then after that, we hit full stride. So either the culture was already instilled or they knew it themselves, but the response was really something. And you mentioned the championship game against Central Michigan. I'm not sure you could have drawn up a better start than Thomas returning the opening kickoff all the way down to the two, and then you guys punching it in two plays later. What was the mood on the sideline like after the start to that game?
Yeah, no, obviously it was awesome. They decided to fur and they kick it to, you know, we got a kid that's a really good returner, and our special teams have been lights out all year. And then we get a couple blocks, and Mo doesn't need a lot of help, and he rips it 98 yards or two. And, you know, we're an underdog again. The other amazing thing about this team, we've played 13 games, 12 against 1A opponents. We've been an underdog in 10 of our 12 games. And in the league, we've been an underdog 7 out of 9 times, so we're an underdog again Saturday, and it was nice to kind of make that first swing of the game and let them know that, hey, we're here to play. And so to go 5-2 in league games, that supposedly you're not good enough. These kids have kind of had a chip on their shoulder. We got a true freshman quarterback. We got two true freshmen that start at right and left guard for us. And we got a lot of young kids. So we haven't been totally respected based on Vegas. And I usually say Vegas usually knows what they're doing, but they've been pretty wrong on our team this year.
Chuck Martin joining us. I love that. I would normally say just that. Vegas knows what they're doing, but they have been wrong. So when you lay it out like that and you put the numbers out there like that, let me ask you, how much of this team's success is about pure talent and how much of it is about mental and physical toughness and grit?
Yeah, and obviously you have to have both. If you don't have talent, you know, you just can't will your way to victory. So we obviously have enough talent. We're just really inexperienced on offense. We have a really good defense. We have four senior specialists that are really talented. We got a kicker that's going to kick on Sundays. He's 25 or 29. He's 6 of 7 outside of 48 yards. So we've kind of been old school. You know, got a true freshman quarterback in Brett Gabbert, playing Gabbert's younger brother, who's had a really nice year as a freshman year of our league. But he's a true freshman playing quarterback. We have two freshmen starting at guard. So we've at times been more conservative than we normally are offensively just because of the youth and inexperience on that side of the ball. So we've just kind of found ways. We knew we're going to have to play low-scoring games, and our league's high-scoring, but we're not. So we play games in the 20s, which lends to be close, but we get used to playing those types of games, and the other teams in our league really aren't. So a lot of it has to do with talent, but a lot of it has to do with toughness and perseverance, and we showed that after that Ohio State loss when everybody kind of left us for dead, and we bounced back, and we had to play Buffalo, won our league last year in our first game, and find a way to knock them off. So our kids are pretty resilient. They're pretty tough. Our culture has been set. I remember the first time I talked to you, the reason you want to talk to me is I was trying to sell a can of a good ass kicking if he came to Miami to play for me. And we found kids like that. We've recruited kids that want to be tough-minded, want to be pushed, want to be challenged. And in a year like this, it really showed that we've recruited the right type of kid.
Man, I love it. Chuck Martin is joining us. We did talk about that back then. So knowing this then, your work is unfinished. You've got a great opportunity ahead of you. But what's it mean to you to know that these players are now going to know for the rest of their lives, no matter what they do, they were part of turning around the program during some of its roughest years, and nobody can take that from them?
No doubt. We talked about that after the game. We've been talking about it for 5 years, you know. Very proud tradition here at Miami, the cradle coaches and all the success and all the championships they've won and all the things they've done. But we took it over, and, you know, it was 0-16 when we got here. We ran it up to 0-22 before we found a way to win a game. And it was the bleakest most. I say we scored 9 touchdowns in a full season the year before we took over. So it was a disaster. And like you said, these kids know, and a lot of our kids talked about after Saturday's winning the conference championship game, that, hey, they know when they came here, it was a proud program, but it's fallen, and they know now that they've restored the pride to a really, really proud football program.
All right, so finally, Chuck, you've got Louisiana in the bowl game. How do you go about preparing for that challenge? What's it look like to you?
Yeah, they're very athletic. We have one like opponent. They beat OU by 20, who we beat 24-21, who's the other top, one of the other top teams on the east side. So there's one like one, but we're tremendously athletic, really good skill, really good on both sides of the ball. So, again, we're 14-point underdogs, so probably pretty fitting way for us to end our season. They're playing three and a half hours from home. We're playing 16. They'll probably be a pretty partisan crowd, and kind of everything stacked against us. We've only played 5 home games, so this will be, I think, our 9th road game of the year. So pretty much par for the course for us. We're going to be on the road. We're going to be underdog against a really talented team that people don't think we're going to beat. But I'll take the kids that are getting on the flight with me any day of the week.